This is Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's not easy, obviously, the position we're in, but, you know, the guys are showing up, and it's good to see, obviously, you know, a bigger game against Edmonton. You know, we don't like each other and rivalry, but, you know, I thought, you know, it sucks, you know, coming short like this with a game. You know, it would have been nice for us to feel better after this one.
A good effort from the Flames on Saturday night, not enough to take down the Oilers in the final Battle of Alberta this season. Next up for the Calgary Flames, their final long road trip of the season with three games coming up this week in California. Welcome to Sportsnet Today. Happy Monday. Logan Gordon along with you in the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studios. For our friends at Doug Lacey's Basement Systems, they're your local experts for basement waterproofing, sump pumps, crawl spaces, foundation repair, and radon mitigation. They're all things basement. He was at dlbasementsystems.com. Lots of reaction from the Flames' loss to the Edmonton Oilers on Saturday, as well as a look ahead to a three-game road trip into California for the team as they grind towards the end of the regular season continues for the Calgary Flames. There's a practice day at the Dome on Monday. We'll get you the latest from the team, including a recent call-up. Hear from head coach Ryan Huska and Dustin Wolf on a practice day. We'll also check in with our pal Kelly Rudy, former NHLer. Of course, the color voice of the Calgary Flames on Sportsnet. We'll get his thoughts on this Flames team as the season comes to an end. Talk about the Wolf-Markstrom workload, among other things. Also check in with Scott Laughlin of SiriusXM NHL Radio. Checking on the playoff races out east. All of a sudden, four or five teams now in the Eastern Conference fighting for the final wild card spots. And our pal Eric Francis from Sportsnet.ca is going to join us. Some special news in the WHL to talk about that our pal Eric was first on last week. We'll get into that with franchise in hour number two. But a quick reminder, the fan feedback line open to you on the program at 960-960. Would love to hear from you on this Monday edition of the program. Outstanding producers on this Monday edition of the show are Cam and Azam. Let's kick things off with some Calgary Flames talk on this Monday. 4-2 is the final score. Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers once again victorious, but not for a lack of effort from the Calgary Flames. This one tied in the third period before Evan Bouchard would score on the power play at 10:36. That's your game winner. Oilers take the season series over the Calgary Flames. 3-1. And we wait until next season for our next edition of the Battle of Alberta. Leon Draisaitl would score his 40th goal. Of course, Connor McDavid with a couple of helpers in this game. And the Oilers get past the Flames. But I think most Flames fans walk away fairly happy with what they saw from the group on Saturday. Of course, you never like to lose to your provincial rivals. You heard from Jonathan Huberdeau on the intro. These teams don't like each other. That's pretty evident. It's a classic NHL rivalry. Despite one team going to the playoffs and one team not, you could clearly see there was a little bit more energy from the Calgary Flames than we had seen in previous weeks. Just not enough to power off an Edmonton team that is heading to the postseason and was probably the better team in the third period when it was all said and done. Next up for the Calgary Flames, they're heading to California, that classic Pacific Division road trip through the California teams comes late in the season for the Flames. Get your coffee out this week. It's a couple of late starts, starting on Tuesday in San Jose, and Thursday in LA, Friday in Anaheim to take on the Ducks, a rematch of last Tuesday's game at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome before the final three of the regular season. Sunday against Arizona in Vancouver next Tuesday, and then another rematch with the Sharks Thursday, April 18th, to close it all out. A little bit of a different lineup for the Calgary Flames on Saturday, as we've seen some injuries, we've seen some different guys in different places, and probably the most anticipated move on Saturday, Connor Zeri playing at center ice, something I know the fan base has clamored for, something we are excited to see from Connor Zeri after being healthy scratched by the head coach. And there was a lot of eyes on number 47, and it's all said and done. Connor Zeri finishes without any points on Saturday. Had three shots on goal, two hits, played just under 16 and a half minutes. Struggled a bit in the faceoff dot, going 33% winning when he was on the draw. But overall, some interesting combinations and possibilities, perhaps, with Connor Zeri getting the start at center. And I know, like I mentioned, it was something a lot of people had clamored for heading into that game, and it's something that looks like will continue for the Calgary Flames. I can tell you, per our pal Pat Steinberg, of course, the host of Flames Talk and the host of Flames Hockey here on Sportsnet 960, this is what the lines and D pairings look like for head coach Ryan Huska on practice day Monday. I can tell you that no Oliver Shillington. He did not practice. As an upper body injury after he collided with Nazem Kadri in Saturday's loss to the Oilers. But just day-to-day for Shillington. He didn't practice. Maintenance day for Captain Michael Backlund, who was banged up heading into Saturday's game. And Anjuman Japani remaining day-to-day as well. So this is what the lines and deep pairings look like, with a recalled Ilya Solovyov on an emergency basis to fill in for Oliver Shillington. Top line, Pospisil, Kadri, Kuzmenko, Hunt with Sharon Govich back in the middle, Coleman on the right, Huberto, Zeri, Mangiapane, Greer with Rooney and Coronado, Walker Duehr operating as the extra forward. D pairings, Uyghur with Miramanov, Gilbert with Anderson, Solovyov with Pahal, Nikita Ochocek operating as the seventh defenseman. Of course, your two goaltenders, Jacob Markstrom and Dustin Wolf. Let's check in with the head coach, Ryan Huska. As always, we bring you the latest from the Flames locker room on every edition of Sportsnet Today. Time to hear from the head coach following practice and following his team's loss to the Edmonton Oilers on Saturday.
Coach, what's the thinking in bringing up Slovia?
We have a couple bumps and bruises, so we want to make sure we have the proper amount of bodies for one. And from everything that we're hearing, he's been our best guy with the Wranglers over the last little while, so he's deserving of another opportunity.
Do you have an update on Oliver?
Day-to-day, just like the rest of the guys. You know, Bax is a maintenance day. Manji's still day-to-day, so everybody else would be falling into that category.
Speaking of which, Kadri looked like he had a little collision there. Is he all right after?
He just needs some stitches, so not the way anybody wants to start. He's fine.
Yeah, he's fine. Miss.
No.
When you sent Solovyov back last time, what were the, you know, things you asked him to get better at or work on?
The biggest thing was to play consistently at this level, defensemen have to make a good first pass. And that's the one thing that we really sent him back with and we wanted him to focus on. Yes, use his size because that separates him from other defensemen. He's a big, strong man. We wanted him to really focus on making that good first pass all the time so we can get out of our zone clean. And from what it sounds like, he's been doing a much better job of that.
We all know coming back from an injury isn't tough, but Kevin Rooney, I mean, missed so much of this season, has come back, and he's pretty much leading you guys in penalty kill minutes at this point. What's been just the key to his success right now, what finding a role in excelling?
I think he feels like there's a little value there that we see in him, so he's feeling valued. One thing I think with Kevin is he did a really good job of being mentally strong. So a situation where he wanted to come back, changed his whole summer, as we've talked about. He wanted to come back and make an impression. You get hurt in camp. It's not an easy thing for a guy to go through, and he did a really good job of sticking with it. And when he came back, he was ready with the work that he put into it, and he's done a great job in that role that we're asking of him to do. I think it brings some stability to that line. He's a guy that skates, he has size, and he's becoming a penalty killer for us as well. So he's done a lot of good things.
And you notice the difference in the offseason preparations of going a different spot?
Just a different person when he came back. And I think part of it is it was tough on him the year prior to go down. Once he was down for a little bit, he started to get his game going and realized how he had to play and that he enjoyed playing the game again, because it's hard on an older player when they're asked to go to the minors like he did. But I think he, by switching everything up over the course of the summer, it kind of gave him a new outlook on things, and he came back in a really good mind frame.
How'd you like Connor playing? I know it was only one game, yeah. But playing center on Saturday?
I liked him. I thought he did a really good job. So we'll look to give him another opportunity there if we can, based on our lineup and all that stuff that will go on here over the next little bit. But I thought he did a good job. He was moving his feet again, and I found he was competitive on and around the puck.
Are you interested in seeing Pospisil up the middle at some point too?
He's a tough one for me. Okay. There's times where I would like to see it, but I feel like he's created a real good identity for himself as an up-and-down winger that's really hard to play against. So I don't really want to take that away from him. I know that we can use him if we have to in those situations, but I really like the direction he's headed right now playing on the wing.
There you go. Head coach Ryan Huska checking in with the media following practice Monday at the Scotiabank Saddledome. A little bit of everything there with the head coach. Yes, Nazem Kadri did leave practice early on Monday. After a bit of a collision, he needed a couple stitches, but is good to go for the Calgary Flames. And interesting question there from Flames Talk co-host and post-media's own Wes Gilbertson on the potential of maybe seeing Martin Pospisil down the middle for the Calgary Flames. Didn't exactly sound like Ryan Huska was fully in love with the idea, but lots still to go for the Calgary Flames before it's all said and done. Who knows, maybe we do see Martin Pospisil get one of those opportunities down the stretch. It's going to be a special road trip for one Calgary Flame in particular, Dustin Wolf, obviously now with the club on a permanent basis while Dan Vladar is out for the rest of the season. This time of year, tough for everybody knowing the Flames are out of the playoffs. But for Dustin, a chance to go back to his home state of California, first time as a full-time NHLer, obviously back-to-backs Thursday and Friday for the Calgary Flames. Markstrom got to start on Saturday, so we're expecting to see Dustin Wolf at some point during this road trip for the Flames, maybe even once or twice. San Jose, LA, and Anaheim all on the schedule, but it's an exciting time for Dustin Wolf, and he got to talk to the media about the upcoming road trip and how nice it'll be to play in front of friends and family in California coming up in the next couple days.
I don't know what the plan is for Tuesday, but just the opportunity to head into San Jose is, as a member of the Flames, what does that mean to you?
I mean, that's been the dream all along, since I was a kid going to games there, and you know what, it's going to be a special evening for, you know, myself, and you know, to be in that environment as an NHLer, and you know, have some family and friends in the crowd. It's going to be pretty awesome.
I know you played him twice here, but if you get to play him tomorrow there, like, it'll be a little bit different, won't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a road game, but it's a hometown game too, and you know, those are extra special. And you know, one I certainly won't take lightly if I get the opportunity.
How much teal did you own when you were a kid?
too much.
Yeah.
No, that was what the house consisted of, Sharks memorabilia, and you know, it eventually converted, and now it's all red, but it'll be special to be back there.
Who are your favorite Sharks players to watch?
I grew up watching Nabokov and crossed paths with him the last couple of years, which has been pretty awesome, and they've been, ever since I was a kid, they've been an outstanding team, and you know what, they've had some guys like Marlow and Thornton go through there from the very beginning, and obviously they've moved on and retired, but I'm just excited to be back home.
When I just saw online today the major penalty in the comeback in 2019, that was just before you were drafted. Like, when did the allegiance kind of end to San Jose? Was it the minute you got drafted here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, my family relocated to Los Angeles when I was 10, and you know, at that point the Kings went and won two cups, so I watched them pretty closely, and you know, kind of maybe switched over then, and then obviously everything completely switched in 2019 in June. So you know, I'm extremely excited to be here and get the opportunity.
Dustin, when you were a kid, like whether it was in San Jose, whether it was after you moved to LA, were you one of those kids who was sitting in the rink dreaming of playing, or were you just kind of soaking up the game?
I mean, you always dream of playing. You know, ever since you're a kid, you wanna play pro hockey, you wanna play in the NHL, and you know, to have that come true in the first place is pretty awesome, and now getting the opportunity to go back to where I grew up, where I've got family and friends, and old building. I grew up watching a lot of hockey games, and it'll be pretty awesome.
When you go back, you know, feel maybe some nerves, extra excitement. Will you try to use that, or will you just kind of stick to your routine and try to push that away?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, for sure. It's exciting, and you know, I'm excited to get to go home, see my grandma and aunt and uncle, and you know, I think no matter if I play or not, it's going to be an exciting evening.
How did you feel in your last start in Winnipeg?
I was happy with it. You know, the result didn't come, but you know, I think each and every day I've gotten 1% better, and I think that's shown over, you know, the games I've been able to play. I'm getting to the top of my paint. I'm you know, I'm connecting with my posts well. I'm seeing pucks through screens, and you know, it's little stuff like that where you work really hard in that stuff on practice, and no, it's fun and exciting to see that translate to games.
Do you look at it as wanting another crack at the Sharks after that start in mid-February? Does a goalie need to always put that stuff out of his head?
Yeah, I mean, you try not to think about it, but you know what? That's a game where I learned a lot from, and now is the opportunity to hopefully give it back to him.
You hear about NBA guys all going to L.A. for the summer and training together. I was just talking to Kevin Rooney, and he was telling me about Jeff Turcotte, who I know was a coach for the Junior Kings. Is there a community of you guys who are kind of around there working out?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the last three or four summers, I've pretty much spent the month of August down in Huntington Beach, and you know, my agency's down there, so we have skates out of there. There's skates at the Ducks rink in Anaheim, and there's a handful of guys that stick around there for majority of the summer. I've stayed at Eric Conner's house for, you know, a large majority of time during COVID and after that, and you know, it's fun going back there where it's a place you lived, you grew up as a kid, and you know, you've got some good friends, and well, it's nice to go back there, and the weather's pretty nice.
There you go, Dustin Wolf checking with the Flames goaltender on Monday after practice. Exciting road trip for him, his first time heading back to his home state of California. As a full-time NHLer, will he see the game on Tuesday? Back-to-back Thursday, Friday. I mean, I think ideally you'd like to see Dustin twice if you're the Flames on this road trip. I mean, Tuesday against San Jose seems like a pretty logical spot. Maybe you give Markstrom Thursday against the Kings and then back to Dustin on Friday. That's how I would do things, knowing that you need to see Dustin down the stretch here. He obviously sounds like a motivated guy to play in front of friends and family. That's what I would do. We'll wait and see what the head coach decides to do ahead of the game on Tuesday in San Jose. I want to jump on the text line at 960-960 with a fan feedback line. It's always open to you here on the program. Had a couple texts come in when we were playing Ryan Huska there and Dustin Wolf, and I thought I'd jump in to respond to a couple. First one came in, the Dustin Wolf one. Sounds like someone who wants to play in the States. I mean, you can say nice things about California and where you're from and still be happy in Calgary. Not every American's going to leave for California or to go back to the United States. I think Dustin's just generally excited to get back to playing in California as an NHLer. I wouldn't even start going down the conversation of a guy that wants is going to leave Calgary for the greener pastures of the USA. I think he's just a guy being honest about being excited about the road trip. This text comes in and says, Flames need to ensure that their commitment to winning isn't compromised just because they won't be playing postseason hockey. Flames give up three breakaways and played on the perimeter against the Oilers. Flames didn't have a goal 5-on-5, and Huska said he was satisfied with the Flames 5-on-5. That's not the right messaging if the Flames want to build a winning culture. All I would say to that is I think there's a commitment to doing things the right way in Calgary, and then there's also understanding that there's a talent gap for this group right now. Did they give up three breakaways? Yeah. Did they have some perimeter play against the Oilers? Sure. I'm not going to argue against any of that. This is just a team that wants to do a lot of those good things and wants to be a great team, but you have to understand they're just not, it sucks to say it, but it's the reality of it, especially given all the names they've lost. They probably just don't have the talent to dominate at 5-on-5, especially against a playoff team like Edmonton. That's just kind of the reality of it right now. So I think if you see good stretches of play, as long as the effort's there, and we've talked about it, and fans have seen it, texters have seen it, the difference over the last couple of weeks of when this team is really engaged and when they're doing the right things and when they're not, it's pretty obvious. So, yeah, are you sort of grading on a curve? Yeah, I think expectations have changed for this group as well. I think you'd be very surprised, at least I would be, especially given, you know, the quality of opponents some nights, that this team is going to have a perfect game or near perfect game. They just don't have that same talent level, especially defensively, as they did earlier in the season. Brenton Langdon texting in saying, I'd like your thoughts on the highest paid Flame in history playing on the third line. What is Conroy going to do with this guy from level of play to the cost to the cap? And correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm assuming that's a text about Jonathan Huberdeau and his play of late. And Jonathan had an assist on Saturday, played on that line with Connor Zeri. 16:51 of total ice time for Jonathan. Just the one shot on goal. And as we look at Jonathan's season totals, he's sitting at 48 points in 75 games. That's 7 points below what he achieved last year in 79 games. So, yeah, it's I think the level of play from Jonathan has kind of gone back to what we saw earlier this season. The calendar month of 2024 has obviously been the strongest portion of his time with the Flames. There's no doubt about that, but is it to the level that you want it to be? Is it to the level where that cap hit is palatable? Still probably not. If I'm being honest, it's still not where the Flames want it to be. And, you know, to that texture, Brent, I don't know what the answer is right now for Jonathan Huberdeau and the Calgary Flames. I think you want to try to continue some of the things. Like I said, the point total calendar month since January has been really good, and it's been a more acceptable level, but there are still those dips, and the dips in play are really hard to handle for this guy because when it's down, it's really down, and he's hard to notice. And for the Calgary Flames, yeah, you're right. It's the highest paid member of the team ever. He's on a massive contract. He's not going anywhere anytime soon. Maybe it's a line mate. Maybe it's something in the offseason that clicks with him, but I don't know what Craig Conroy can really do. He didn't sign that contract. He didn't bring in Jonathan Huberdeau. He's just kind of been left to deal with it. It sounds like a bad way of saying it. I mean, he's not hurting the team, but I mean, is he helping at $10 million? I really don't know. Lastly, this one says, hi, Logan. Please explain to me the point of playing Coronado on the fourth line for 5 minutes a game. May as well send him to the Wranglers if you're not going to play him. Matt Coronado on Saturday for the Calgary Flames. Yeah, 5:44 of ice time. He was -1 on the evening. I can't really disagree with that text. I really haven't been impressed with Walker Dewar this season, but he's at a different point developmentally than Matt Coronado is. And with Jacob Pelche there, with the Wranglers headed to the postseason, me and Pat talked about this on Flames Talk a couple of weeks ago. And yeah, if Matt Coronado's not going to play up the lineup, it's a lot better than him sitting. Don't get me wrong. A couple of days ago, we were talking about him not being in the lineup, period. If it's just going to be 5:44, yeah, maybe it's time to have that conversation about sending Matt down and getting some first line action, some really prime minutes back in the American Hockey League where he's had a lot of success. And let's be honest, we know he's going back there. The Flames won't make the postseason. The Wranglers are. At some point, Matt's going down anyways. Maybe this is the time to have that discussion. And to be honest, I don't think it's the worst one to have. I think from a developmental standpoint, I'm with that texter in the sense of, would I rather have him at 19, 20 minutes in the American Hockey League playing first power play, first line minutes for that team rather than 5:44 at the NHL level? Yeah, I think the answer is pretty simple. That's not hard to argue as far as I'm concerned. More on the Flames coming up in just a few moments. We'll take a break, come back on the other side. We'll be joined by the color voice of the Calgary Flames on Sportsnet, Kelly Rudy, former NHLer, member of the Hockey Night in Canada panel on Saturday nights. We'll get Kelly's thoughts on the Flames play of recent, and also get his thoughts on the goaltending usage down the stretch for the Calgary Flames. More Flames chat when we come back. You're on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Flames wrapped up the final Battle of Alberta Saturday in a 4-2 loss to the Oilers. Next up for the group, a 3-game road trip into California. 4 games against the Coyotes, Canucks, and Sharks to close out the 2023-2024 regular season. And despite not heading to the postseason, Saturday sure had a lot of emotion between the Flames and the Oilers. Don't tell anybody in Alberta that Battle of Alberta don't tell anyone in Alberta that that game Saturday didn't mean anything. Lots of energy at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome and a good effort despite the loss for the Calgary Flames. And now, like I mentioned, 6 games left in the regular season to close things out. To dive more into the Calgary Flames and some storylines as we enter the final 2 weeks of the regular season, very happy to welcome in down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, former NHLer, Hockey Night in Canada guest, and of course the color voice of the Calgary Flames on Sportsnet, Kelly Rudy, joins us this afternoon. Thanks for the time as always, Kels. How are you?
Oh, great. Thanks, Logan. I'm having a wonderful afternoon. I came from Toronto to San Jose last night, and I am sitting outside this area. It's an area called Santana Row. This area didn't exist when I played here for the Sharks, my short stay here for 2 years. It's gorgeous, a whole bunch of shops, hotel, and I got a very important text about 20 minutes ago, Logan. And it was from my broadcast partner, Rick Ball. He said, my one job this afternoon is to find a patio for Rick and Ryan Leslie and I have dinner tonight. And so that's what my journey will consist of this afternoon. And I'm sure I'll find a beautiful place to have dinner for the three of us. And we can talk about that Battle of Alberta. And in fact, the last 2 games, how competitive the Flames were. They lost both, but I thought both games they were much, much better.
Yeah, look, it'll be hard to find a place to let those other two in, but I think if you're doing the scouting, they should be nice enough to find a former Shark a place to have dinner tonight, hey?
I can tell you what, Logan, I know one thing. It will have red wine. Ryan Leslie does not partake in the wine part, but Rick and I will definitely have a glass, and it'll be a beautiful night.
That's great to hear, Kels. I would love to talk to you about the Flames here and this stretch drive. And Saturday, a lot of fun for the Flames, despite a tough one. It's always tough to lose to your provincial rivals. And going back, you mentioned that last game against Winnipeg. You've noticed a shift in the level of play from the Calgary Flames. It's been noticeable, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I think it was player-driven. And in particular, I want to focus on Mackenzie Weegar. I think that he has not only, like everybody, all the Flames fans know how well he's played, but I think his leadership skills have really shone here in the last little while. Like him, Logan, you're around the team and you're in the dressing room and things. He is a really great guy, but great guys don't always have the ability to speak up and do what he's been doing lately. So I just give him all the credit in the world. I think he's a wonderful human being, but to go along with that, he's really developed in all aspects of being a hockey player.
How hard is this stretch as a player, Kelly? Did you ever have a stretch like this in your NHL tenure where you knew the last couple weeks of the season you weren't going to the playoffs and you needed to find ways to sort of self-motivate?
Yeah, of course. I played 15 years and unfortunately 3 years I didn't make the playoffs. And I remember the very first time it was jeepers. I think it was my 12th year in the league. First time I didn't make the playoffs. And it was leading into that situation. It was kind of like disbelief. I said it on the air on Thursday when they still had a chance that, you always believe. I don't care how desperate it looks and what the odds are and what the stats say and the when they say that you have a 4% chance of making the playoffs, you still believe. You have to, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when that day comes, though, and you are officially eliminated, it is really difficult to find motivation. But you are, what Ryan Huska said, a pro. And I love that line. I said it in the game versus Winnipeg that if you don't get – if you're not self-motivating, then it tells everybody a lot about you, that, you know, it's easy to be discouraged, but you still have to find a way to bring your best. And so that's what I found the Flames have done the last two games. Everybody was disappointed with the game versus Anaheim. There's no doubt about that. But these last two, I feel like they're getting the best out of everybody. And they're making, you know, what is a disappointing season, you know, livable at least for this next 2 weeks.
I'd love to get your thoughts, Kel, on something that made news to that Winnipeg game. Connor Zary didn't play, and Ryan Huska made the point of saying, yeah, you know what, it's important for development at this time of the season, but there are no free games in the NHL, and sometimes you have to remind somebody of that. And what did you make of that decision and at this time of year for Ryan to go out and do something like that?
Oh, I thought that was a great coaching move, and I love the line, as he said, what you mentioned. And you know why I thought it was so good is that, unfortunately for Zary, he was in the press box Thursday night, and I had taken a break from my broadcast duties during the second intermission. And so I left the broadcast location, and I was in the broadcast press box, and I ran into Connor, and he and I had a pretty lengthy chat. And what I really got from the conversation, and he even shared with me how disappointed he was not to be in the lineup, but I got the sense that next game he was going to be in, whenever that was, and it turned out to be Saturday, that he was going to be a highly motivated athlete, and he certainly was. Like, he was excellent. We talked about it in the broadcast Saturday, how that line started off incredibly well.
Yeah.
And that's part of the learning process as a young player, that you will be faced with disappointment, and you have to find a way to overcome what your feelings are and find the best in yourself. It's hard. I mean, nobody likes to be a healthy scratch, right? Right. It's embarrassing. And, you know, you feel badly that you're in this situation. And, but, you know, I think he made the best of it.
And for Ryan Huska, I imagine, Kelly, as a former player, it's nice to know, you know, where guys sit and that there is an expectation from the coach, despite, like we talked about, you know, it's a tough time of year. No one wants to be in this position, but the coach has to maintain that standard for everybody in the lineup, right?
Oh, totally, Logan. If you don't, then things are wrong. I mean, just because you're not in a playoff position, you still have to send the same message, right? It has to be consistent. I don't care if there's 60 games left or seven. You have to make sure that you maintain a standard. And every single player knows that they could be in or out of the lineup based on their performance.
How much can this team, and I guess this would come from those years, Kelly, when you didn't make the playoffs, but how much can the end of this season bleed into next season? Like, how much can Ryan Huska and the coaching staff sort of set standards heading into training camp in the fall? Is that something that can happen for his group? Is that something they can achieve?
Well, I think, I've never been in upper management, but I can tell you that just from my experience playing, that I think management hopes that this experience drives the guys even further. Like, I mean, they're pro athletes, they're extremely driven anyways.
For sure.
But the disappointment of not making the playoffs stings more than anything. Like, I really, when I think back those 3 years I didn't make it, how disappointed I was and how hurt. And I remember training in the summer thinking, man, I can't let that happen again. And so it does motivate players. And you hope that when they come back in the fall, that they're ready to go. And that I think when they look back on this season, Logan, they'll say, okay, there are parts where they're really, really good, but the parts when it wasn't so good, they let it slide too long. Like, they had too many extensive losing streaks, and that would be the thing that they have to eliminate. And if they can, then I think that they're a playoff team.
One thing we've watched a lot, really since, I guess, going back to March, since Dan Vladar went down, is how the Flames have used their goaltenders over the last little while here. And we'll get to Dustin in a bit here, but I mean, even when Dan went down, and I'm sure you felt this way too, Kelly, it didn't necessarily mean just because Dustin was going to be up on a full-time basis that you expected Jacob Markstrom to just take a back seat for the rest of the season. He's not built like that, is he?
No, he's not. And nor should he be. Any number one goalie. He wants to play. He doesn't care if it's game 35 or game 75 when you're out of the playoffs. You want to play. That's what you do. That's what you're paid to do. That's what he's done his entire life, right? Like he is, when you get to be a number one guy, what you've done basically your entire life is you have been able to weed out all the people that have been trying for that same job that are standing in your path. And so that's what he continues to do. He'll want to continue to do that. And he doesn't want a free night off. That's no good player, no good athlete feels that way.
And for Dustin Wolf, we heard from him today, and we sort of talked a bit about, you know, that individual motivation. He's really excited for this road trip, Cal, because first chance to go back to his home state and play in front of friends and family as an NHLer. Did you have a similar feeling when you got to go back to Alberta the first time when you were a full-time NHLer with the Islanders?
I did, for sure. I sound like I'm hesitating because I am, because I remember those as being – it's the weirdest thing, Logan. So here's my experience. I can't speak for Dustin how excited he might be to come back to San Jose. He's from a place called Gilroy, which is about an hour south of here. Yeah. I remember it's so vivid to me. I remember growing up, and every single time my parents, my brother – family, friends would be at my games when I was a kid. I loved it. Like, my mom and dad came to every single game. But then when I became a professional, all of a sudden it scared me. Then I was like, oh boy, I hope I don't disappoint them. And then, you know, I go back to Edmonton when I was playing for New York, or even in the latter part of my career in LA and San Jose, I was always so darn nervous that I was going to disappoint people or embarrass them. And luckily, I didn't. Like, I usually had a pretty good game in Edmonton. But that's overriding fear because, you know, they've been supporting you. They did everything. They paid for everything as an amateur growing up. And what little you could do now, you know, buy tickets and kind of help them a little bit otherwise. But it's just so, I don't know, the emotion. You can tell in my voice right now, I'm kind of reliving it. I'm just like, wow, mom, dad, I hope that when the game is over and you're proud of me.
Yeah.
kind of corny, but very real.
And you know what, Kelly, you could hear that same emotion in Dustin even just talking about it today.
Right?
He was talking about his uncle and his grandma and all the people that, you know, would have helped him become NHLers at this point. And the fact that this is going to be his first opportunity to be in front of them in this situation. And he played in Stockton, right, as a member of the Flames. He was in California, so it's not his first time, but you know it means something more to him this time around.
Well, and there's a great storyline there, too. So we talked about Wolf, and then there's a goalie that has only played three games for the Sharks or NHL games, and his name is Devin Cooley, and he's from a place called Los Gatos, which I just checked. That's where we lived, in that area here in San Jose. It's about 7 miles from where I'm standing. And so Devin Cooley, I'm hoping, because he got his first NHL win on Saturday.
Yep.
They lost yesterday. I'm hoping it'll be a matchup between Wolf and Cooley tomorrow night. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if Ryan Huska has disclosed his starter.
Haven't heard yet, no.
Fingers crossed, right. That's fingers crossed. That's what I'm hoping, because it'll really add a storyline to our broadcast tomorrow.
Yeah, and that was so cool. That was one of the highlights the last couple of days in the NHL was Cooley's parents in the stands.
Yes.
His mom had the jersey on and clapping for him, and that was a really cool moment.
Oh, my gosh. So amazing. And then, because I shared on broadcast, that's the area that we, or a lot of the players, kind of live in. That's Kevin Bieksa was at one point, it looked like he was going to be traded from Vancouver to San Jose. Instead, he went to Anaheim. But he conditionally had bought a house in Los Gatos. So there's a lot of connections there on our broadcast on Saturday.
Just speaking of San Jose and this California trip as a whole, Kel, for you, obviously, you played for two of these California teams in your career, but I'm curious, when you go back, have you seen, I know, and you funny you mentioned Kevin Bieksa, because he talks about his hockey camp in Anaheim and all the growth in that state of hockey over the last couple of years. Is that something you notice when you go back to California, is how much the game has grown there?
Oh, 100%, Logan. So I have another connection as well. So Michael Eisner, the chairman of Disney, was hanging around our team long before the Anaheim Ducks. So he was good friends with Bruce McNall, our owner at the time. And so Michael Eisner's son played goal. So I remember standing at the whiteboard with Michael and his son going over some things about playing goal and position or positional play and things like that. And then Michael Eisner, Disney, they bought Ducks, or yeah. I guess they, founded the Ducks. And so there's lots of connections for me in California. But I remember when I was here in Los Angeles in 89, I was traded. I want to say, Logan, there is about four or five arenas in Southern California. There was the Great Western Forum where we played. There's a place called the Culver City Ice Rink. I remember San Diego. San Diego had a pretty rich hockey history. A lot of people are not aware of that. But they had a couple of rinks, and there's one somewhere else. But now I did some research, five, 10 years ago for a project, and there's like 60-some rinks just in Southern California, and many of them have multiple ice sheets, and it's really growing. And all because of Bruce McNall, his vision, and the idea of bringing Wayne Gretzky to town. So that was that's a history of the growth of hockey here. I was, for a short amount of time, I was a part owner of the Nanaimo Clippers with some Calgary businessmen. And we could have, at that time, 8 imports. And oftentimes, 6 or 7 of them would be kids from California because they were so good, so talented.
Yeah, it's been crazy to see it grow. And nowadays you can't really think of hockey without, Ryan Getzlaff winning that cup in Anaheim and the Kings and the run that they went on. And hopefully, I'm sure you feel the same way, in the next couple of years, San Jose gets back to all those years with Patrick Marleau and Joe Thornton. And you would have crossed paths probably with Patrick in your time in San Jose, would you not have?
Oh, boy. Well, my last year in the NHL, 97-98, was Patrick's first, and he lived with my family. So, So I've known Patrick for a long, long time. We still text often, and he's just a lovely, wonderful guy. Like, I remember him. He was 17, I think, in training camp that year, turned 18 during the season, and he was like a son to me because I was 37, I think. And he was like a big brother to my my 3 daughters. And so he would, we had every single meal together for the most part. We had a little guest house on the property we had here. And it's the best of memories. And then I saw him meet his wife, Christina. Then they had their family.
Yes.
And so it's just been amazing for us as the Rudy family to watch the Marlows and everything that they've experienced in their life.
Yeah, I love those connections, and even your time with Ron Sutter out there in San Jose too was funny.
Yeah, for
and,
sure.
And I was always a sucker growing up, Kel, for Owen Nolan. I was a huge Owen Nolan fan, and when he played his 1 year in Calgary, I was over the moon. He was one of my favorite players growing up, and I always loved that he had that short stint in Calgary.
Yeah, that's right. He was Owen is a really great guy, but I'm laughing now. But looking back on it, man, he was grumpy for those 2 years here.
Yeah.
We laugh about it now, and it's really cool because whenever we do a game here in San Jose, and this is before the pandemic, because I don't know the last time I've been here for a game, but he would always come up to the booth and we'd hug it out, and it was just awesome. So I hope to see that again tomorrow.
That'd be great. Kels, I always appreciate the time. Thank you for hopping on with us. Good luck finding a place for you 3 down there, and enjoy the trip in California, hey?
My pleasure, Logan. Have a great day.
Thank you, sir. Kelly Rudy joining us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. The great Kelly Rudy, as I should say, former NHLer, color voice of your Calgary Flames. You'll hear him on the broadcast all week long in California with Rick Ball. Always great to share some time with Kelly. I love his stories. Cam, it doesn't get better than that. You know, when we talk about, the good guests, the really good ones.
Kelly Rudy is an exceptional guest.
Kelly's on that list.
I would grant Kelly exceptional status on the guest list.
Kelly would be the main guy on the exceptional status list. The guy's an absolute beauty, and great to have that NHL perspective and his thoughts on Dustin Wolf and Jacob Markstrom, and even playing down the stretch here for the Calgary Flames, what it's like. You can't get better firsthand experience than what we got from Kelly Rudy there. So really appreciate him joining us in California as they get set to broadcast the Flames and the Sharks. It starts Tuesday. Late starts for the next 2 Flames games. They're 8:30 puck drops That means Steinberg's going to have your Flames warm up at 7:30. Derek Wills and Megan Nicholson on the call this week for the Flames and the Sharks starting on Tuesday. Again, if you missed it today, no Michael Backlund to practice for a maintenance day. Oliver Shillington day-to-day with an upper body injury after that collision with Kadri in the third period on Saturday. So Ilya Solovyov recalled from the Calgary Wranglers on an emergency basis. He was practicing on a D pairing with Braden Paul on Monday. Wolf and Markstrom, your two goaltenders, of course, and we'll see who starts on Tuesday in San Jose. I've got a feeling it's going to be the local kid, Dustin Wolf. You talked here to Kelp Kelly, and his time is coming back as an NHLer, and we heard from Dustin earlier in the hour about how excited he is. Just feels like a good time after back-to-back, after, you know, Jacob Markstrom got to start back on Saturday. Feels like a good chance to go to Dustin to kick off this three-game road trip for the Flames. We'll take a break, come back on the other side. Let's take a look at the playoff race in the East, because all of a sudden, four or five teams making a case for a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. We'll dive into that with our pal Scott Laughlin from SiriusXM NHL Network Radio. Plus, an hour or two, our pal Eric Francis stops by to check about the latest exceptional status player in the Western Hockey League. It's a Calgary kid. We'll talk about that when we come back. Hour two, Sportsnet Today, next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.